You're listening to Upfront. I'm Brian Edwards Tekert. And for the past week, coverage of immigration has been dominated by the story of what happened to 7-year-old Jacqueline Call McKean, an indigenous Kekchi refugee from Guatemala. Jacqueline and her family crossed the border on foot in New Mexico on December 6th. They turned themselves in at a Customs and Border Protection outpost to apply for asylum. And after about 7 hours in CBP custody, Jacqueline went into a medical crisis and died early on December 8th. And the Trump administration promptly tried to blame the migrants themselves. Here is Secretary of Homeland Security Kirstjen Nielsen on Fox and Friends.
This is just a very sad example of the dangers of this journey. This family chose to cross illegally.
What she means by illegally is that they crossed on foot rather than going through an official point of entry. Now, that is technically a misdemeanor, and walking through the desert is certainly not an easy way to get into the United States. So we want to take a look at why people do it, especially people who fully intend to turn themselves over to U.S. officials to apply for asylum. What is driving refugees away from just getting in line? Our new feature reporter, Lucy King, traveled from a law school in San Francisco to the busiest border crossing in the Western Hemisphere to find out. Here's her report.
The current American law on asylum and refugees has its roots in 1975.
Helicopters airlift the last evacuees from the American embassy roof in Saigon.
When the U.S. withdrew from Vietnam, hundreds of thousands of Vietnamese and Cambodian refugees fled forces the U.S. had been at war with and came here. A few years later, Congress acted.
Today, the law that we deal with is the 1980 Refugee Act, which is embodied in the immigration laws.
That's law professor Bill Hing of the University of San Francisco, where he directs the Immigration and Deportation Defense Clinic. The 1980 Refugee Act opens like this.
The Congress declares that it is the historic policy of the United States to respond to the urgent needs of persons subject to persecution in their homelands, including, where appropriate,
as for the specifics,
the law is very clear. You can apply for asylum irrespective of how you come into the United States. It's literally in the language.
That means people who cross the border in the desert have the same right to apply for asylum as people who try to apply at official border crossings. That's an important point to start with because it's not how the Trump administration talks. Here's recently departed Attorney General Jeff Sessions.
The border is not open. Don't come unlawfully. Make your claim, make your application, and wait your turn.
Again, the law says it doesn't matter how asylum seekers enter the U.S. But for the sake of argument, let's say you want to stay on the good side of people like Jeff Sessions. You don't want to cross the border in the desert. You go to an official border crossing, what's known as a port of entry, like San Ysidro at the Tijuana-San Diego border. The agency you deal with is Customs and Border Protection, or CBP.
Hi, welcome to the United States.
U.S. Customs and Border Protection officers take your safety and that of our country very seriously. They've been safeguarding our nation's borders for more than 200 years and continue to be the first line of defense.
How are you today?
Oh, very good.
Your immigration status will be confirmed.
The way the asylum process begins at the border is that once you've stated something such as, I'm here because I want to apply for asylum, that's very clear, or I'm here because I'm afraid of the violence back in my home country.
Or, in the words of the law,
because of persecution or a well-founded fear of persecution on account of race, religion, nationality, membership in a particular social group, or political opinion.
Once you say those words, the Border Patrol, they are obligated to interview you for a credible fear interview. And if you pass the credible fear interview, then you get to apply for asylum in front of an immigration judge.
If you're among the over 60% of asylum seekers who lose, you get deported back to the country you left. But win your case, and you walk out a free person. That's a very simplified version of a complex process, but it gives you an idea of how things are supposed to work. However, a lot of asylum seekers can't even get started.
When the complaint is that these individuals should follow some legal process, they are trying to follow a a legal process.
That can be harder than it sounds.
Yeah, documents.
This is audio obtained by Human Rights First from February 2017. It's Customs and Border Protection agents at the busiest land crossing in the hemisphere, San Ysidro.
Okay, they gotta go to Anami and register first. They can't come in here. Once they go to Anami, we get them from Anami.
So we already tried that, and that actually didn't work?
No, that's how it works, sir. I have to go through it.
Well, so
they're at an official port of entry, turning away people who want to apply for asylum. Again, Bill Hing.
We have very credible information that the Border Patrol is lying to people at the non-ports of entry. We've heard reports of them telling people, go away, or if you don't go away, you're going to go to jail, come back another day. Some of them have been told to go to the port of entry, but there's all kinds of shouting and coercing people who have come over the border to go back across the border. The Border Patrol is definitely violating U.S. immigration laws and international conventions on how to treat refugees.
Customs and Border Protection is currently being sued over this. An immigrant legal aid organization, El Otro Lado, claims they're creating dangerous conditions for refugees by making them wait at border crossings where they're easy prey for drug cartels and gangs. The suit says CBP agents have threatened to deport asylum seekers, that they've threatened to take away their children, that sometimes they use force to physically move asylum seekers out of ports of entry, that they've coerced asylum seekers to recant their fears on video. CBP declined to comment on the litigation, but sent a statement that reads, in part, CBP processes undocumented persons as expeditiously as possible without negating the agency's overall mission or compromising the safety of individuals within our custody. It goes on to say, individuals presenting without documents may need to wait in Mexico as CBP officers work to process those already within our facilities. According to the agency, San Ysidro can only accommodate 100 asylum seekers under ideal conditions with current staffing. But an Amnesty International report concluded the supposedly unmanageable number of asylum claims appears to be a fiction. So let's look at how you get to be one of that very limited number of asylum seekers who gets processed. It's 7:15 in the morning at the San Ysidro border crossing.
So there's the Mexican Federal Police. There's the Mexican Municipal Police. There are Mexican border guards with, like, M16s on the top there.
Andrew Free is an immigration lawyer and volunteer with El Otro Lado, the migrant aid group that's suing CBP.
But that's the list right there. You see the tracks, those two, like you would get in the line for the movie?
Andrew points to two parallel lines of tape on the ground. The list is a notebook complete with duct tape down the spine. It is the gateway to the asylum process here.
That's where you go and sign your name up.
You get in line to get your name written down on the list, and then you get a number.
And then on the other side, where some of the other volunteers are standing, is the place where people wait for their numbers to come up.
The numbers aren't posted anywhere. You just have to make sure you're back when your number is called. Here's Amanda MacArthur, another legal volunteer with El Otro Lado.
So the way the list works is each day, the U.S. CBP calls up Mexican immigration and tells them how many people they are going to take in the morning and the afternoon. It can be anywhere from 0 to 100 people for the entire day.
1231. Every day, a crowd gathers when it's time for the numbers to be announced. A man holds up the notebook and calls out a number. There are 10 people listed for each number, but there were nowhere near that many who came up when I was watching.
This list is intended and, in fact, circumvents the processing of that person by creating this barrier.
El Otro Lado is part of a lawsuit challenging the legality of the system.
They have it in a notebook, you know, like there's no process. There's no real process for challenging, for having notice. Nobody knows what the number is today at the shelters. Nobody knows exactly how fast it's going to move or how many people will be available to go in per day. Nobody knows what happens if you miss your number by a day because you had an emergency with your child. And it's because it's made up.
But one thing the list does do, it creates hope, especially for people who can plead special circumstances. Andrew and Amanda and I are here at the border crossing to meet someone who fits that description. Here's Sarah, not her real name.
Soy Venezuela.
I'm from Venezuela. I'm 78 years old.
Today's the day she'll try to apply for asylum at the official crossing.
Mis hijas residen.
My daughters live here in the United States, and that's all I have. I don't have anyone else. In Venezuela, I'm all alone.
You could hardly invent a stronger case. Sarah's fleeing Venezuela, a country the U.S. government frequently accuses of human rights abuses.
Bueno, estoy aquí.
I'm here because I need to request political asylum.
Asilo político, porque soy perseguida.
Because I'm persecuted.
De la brigada.
By the military.
Del presidente Maduro.
By President Maduro.
Y incluso han intentado matarme.
And they've even tried to kill me.
Sarah is elderly and in poor health.
Yo sufro de
I suffer from rheumatoid arthritis.
Problemas en los huesos.
Bone problems.
Casi no puedo caminar.
I almost can't walk.
Y soy hipertensa.
And I have hypertension.
Sufro de azúcar.
I suffer from low blood sugar.
Y a mí me dio un infarto.
And I had a heart attack. I'm very sick.
Y estoy muy enferma.
That makes it almost impossible for her to show up at the border every day, hoping her number gets called. But there's a way around the wait. See, the list isn't actually directly managed by U.S. or Mexican officials. It's managed by other migrants, volunteers, who are basically liaisons. Here's legal volunteer Amanda MacArthur again.
Each day, the people who are in charge of the list, I believe there's about four or five of them, talk with each other and decide who needs to be put forward because they're very vulnerable.
The list volunteers agree that Sarah's case should go to the top, and she's all set to cross the border. Andrew and Amanda are elated on the walk back.
Amanda?
Yes.
How you feel? It worked.
I'm so pleased.
Did you think it would happen?
Yes, of course. What other thing that can you say? Of course it was going to work.
I don't know. Let's not roll the tape back 30 minutes.
Of course, that just got Sarah to the border. What happened next is hard to tell. Amanda hadn't heard from Sarah for days and didn't know where she was in the system. Here's what Amanda texted me.
San Isidro was last known location and not sure what has happened. Could be anywhere in U.S.
Basically, the day Sarah got through the list, it's like she walked into a room with no windows, and people outside can only guess at what's happening. When asylum seekers wait for their credible fear interviews or immigration hearings, they're often held in short-term detention facilities known as heladas, or freezers. A federal judge called conditions at one deplorable. Al Otro Lado is using Sarah's case to make an argument that the U.S. has made applying for asylum at official border crossings so difficult that people who fear for their lives are forced to try more dangerous ways to cross. To even get started in the asylum claim system, Sarah needed a team of legal volunteers. They had to know to go through the list instead of straight to the border. To avoid a wait of weeks or months, they had to convince another group of volunteers that Sarah needed to be sent straight through. And after all that, she still basically disappeared for a few days. So Al Otro Lado is trying a new strategy, getting members of Congress to accompany asylum seekers who try to cross at ports of entry. They want the people who make the laws to see how they're being carried out or not.
Every person should be calling their Congress people within the United States, California, and say, this is a call to action. We need to have changes in the way in which people are getting access to asylum.
Last Friday, the Department of Homeland Security made a Facebook posting about the death of Jacqueline Calmaquin, a 7-year-old Guatemalan girl who died in CBP custody after crossing in the desert. Part of it read,
please, we are begging you, present yourselves and your children at a port of entry and seek to enter legally and safely.
For some migrants stuck outside San Isidro for weeks on end, that may not actually sound safer than crossing in the desert. As for Sarah, just before we went to air, Amanda sent me an update. Now they know where she's at, but Amanda still doesn't know whether she's passed her credible fear interview, whether she's still waiting for it, or really, what's next? For KBFA, I'm Lucy Kang in Tijuana, Mexico, and the San Francisco Bay Area, with help from Amanda Bloom.
Lucy Kang's the former producer of this program. She's just come back to KPFA as our new feature reporter, where she's going to be tackling the stories that take weeks to develop. when most of us are locked into a 1 or 2 day turnaround responding to the news.